Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
L-E-T-E-N-E-T. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Anything to lose. I have no secrets to hide. I could just be blunt and people could judge it however they judge it.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 15, Episode 19, The State's Closing Argument. This week, Bob broke down Prosecutor Art Cotter's closing argument in the murder trial of Jody Hill. We have a lot to discuss this week, as well as your listener questions, and I'm joined by Bob and Janet as always. So before we get into that, do we have any housekeeping?
Hey, yep, we have only major housekeeping is something I mentioned, guys, for the last couple of weeks, but just to remind you again that we are on vacation next week.
We are?
Yeah.
Yay.
We're off next week, so there's no episode on Friday or Sunday next week. So I believe it's November 22nd will be our next follow-up episode. We do have an episode coming up this Sunday in 2 days, and then after that, the follow-up for that will be 2 weeks after that. So don't forget that. You can find something else more fun to do than listen to us next week. So we got that going on. We're off next week. Also, well, I think there was a question about this. Was there a question about the FOIA?
Mm-hmm. There was.
There sure was. Shout out to Anna M, who asked about it on the Facebook page.
Yeah. So we've been waiting for the FOIA to come back from the Michigan State Police. I have got that FOIA back. It is incredibly disappointing. And I don't really know what's going on there. So I was told by one of the state troopers that worked on this case, that we have like one of his drawings on the case, that FOIA with the state police, because we keep copies of the entire case file. My report that came with that drawing is in that file. Great. Filed it. And then they sent me back and said, we don't have, and they keep using the term, we don't have any responsive records because this was an assist to Benton Harbor. They have some things that are like lab reports. So I got like this big, long document, but it's all just like the lab reports, like the DNA testing, the firearms analysis, stuff like that. And then I asked, because I was talking to a human back and forth, like outside of the portal that I was emailing with. And I was like, you keep saying that you don't have any other responsive records. What I'm trying to figure out is, do you have the records and you're just not required to give them to me because they were originated from Benton Harbor? Is that what you mean by responsive, or are you saying that you don't have them? And he said, this is all that turns up when we're searching for responsive records. And I'm like, you keep using the word responsive. I'm asking you, do you have the records? I know, I understand if you can't give them to me, but can you explain to me what you have and what does responsive mean? And he just said, this is all the responsive records we have.
Wow, what a weird seeming stonewall.
So the things go on from there. By the way, we finally have a photo. There are pictures in there of Mario's clothing. Nice, crisp, colored pictures of Mario's clothing. The only pictures I've seen of this entire case file. like from like after they were taken off of him at the for the autopsy. Those are the only pictures that I saw in there. I need to go through it and make and check all the redactions and stuff, and I'll probably just publish the whole thing that they put out. I didn't see anything in it that was anything groundbreaking or new. But then I thought, okay, well, if they won't give them to me, I'll file a request with the Niles City Police Department because they were also part of the Homicide Task Force. They replied right away and said, we have no records on this. I'm like, and I said, again, you should have copies of it. The task force was initiated. And he said, no, we return our records back to the initial agency when we're done. We don't have anything. So this is the big concerning thing. I don't know what the state police had, because what was pissing me off is that Matt, the guy that did the crime scene diagram.
Were you supposed to say his name?
Yeah, I've said it before. I mean, it's literally on the diagram. It's written on it. He told me that when he does those diagrams, he writes a report on them. His report is not in the case file, just the diagram is. And he said, that report that I wrote, because that's how it all started. He's like, well, send me the report and maybe I can explain to you more about what this is. He's like, I remember the case, but I don't remember the details, but if I saw my report, I could. If you FOIA my report, then you can get it. So like he makes it like absolutely they had documents that were originated with the Michigan State Police that he created that they're not giving me. And I still don't know if they exist, but the bigger concern to me, what really bothers me about this is, and I said this to the guy at the state police, I'm like, look, there is a high likelihood that this case is going to need to be relitigated. And if you're telling me you don't have the case file, and Benton Harbor is saying they don't have the case, anything from the case file, and the prosecutor's office is saying they don't have anything in the case file, how the fuck are you guys going to prosecute this? Let's say there's a million scenarios, but let's just say there's what you would call a technicality that gets Jody's conviction over or a new trial ordered. Let's say for all of you that think Jody's guilty, let's say Jody is guilty. And based on a technicality, a new trial is ordered and they need to retry Jody. They can't. They literally have zero evidence, nothing. They have no evidence. They have no crime scene pictures. They have nothing. None of the physical evidence, or Jody is innocent, as I believe, and the conviction is overturned based on actual innocence. They can't go find the person or try the person that actually killed Mario because, again, they don't have any, they have nothing. How can everyone be this fucking irresponsible with material like that? It's just me bitching, but this is a problem. It's a big, 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 big problem. As a matter of fact, I just went to the polls today and voted against the new prosecutor that's in there and hoping to get somebody else in there that'll actually talk to me.
Well,
so there's that.
That's what voting's for. Good job.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
All right. So with that being said, let's talk about the closing argument. Did either of you go through? Oh, you know what? This just reminded me. I have not posted the closing arguments yet. I keep forgetting to do that. So no, you haven't read them yet. But based on what you guys heard on the podcast, what were your thoughts on Cotter's closing? Zach, I'll start with you.
Man, attorneys are so good at this. I mean, they're really good at spinning things to fit their narrative, right? Now, there's a lot of things we know, and you presented it really well and broke it down to things that we know that were spun improperly. But if you're just listening to what Cotter has to say, it's pretty damning. I mean, to say that Sonny Lucas says this, and to, you know, I mean, just to break down every aspect that, yes, Jody was wearing that coat. Sonny Lucas says that, Mario said JoJo did. I mean, every little aspect, Cotter spun it to the jury as the narrative sells the story.
His story was good.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think, Janet?
I mean, I agree. And it is really disheartening because it just reminds you that, but it's also good because, you know, you say this a lot on the podcast, but you know, when we are kind of getting all head up about all of this, and sometimes we find ourselves or we see in the chat or in the Facebook posts, like people kind of going at the jury, like, how could a jury ever convict this person? It's just always good for us to put it into a context and a perspective that allows us to revisit the idea of, like, especially because we've also talked about this, like, it seems like people are paying more and different attention to what it means to be a juror, to what our legal system is and does, to what we imagine to be true about our justice system versus what seems to be the case in practice in certain circumstances, maybe more than we're comfortable with. So it's good to just be reminded, like, you know what? These people on the jury, like, they weren't given a whole lot to work with except for the story. that is tied up in a neat little bow at the end by the prosecutor. And as you say in the episode, it's really hard to beat a compelling story unless you've got a really good one. Let that mean what it will, but unless you have a really good one to counter it. And that can be a scary place to be.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. So you're going to hear this week, you're going to hear the defense closing and then the state's rebuttal. When I read through this, that question has come up again, like you said, Janet, over and over again. How could the jury have convicted? How could the jury have convicted? Now, you all have heard the trial transcripts broken down piece by piece by piece. You also have had them cross-reference to, you know, previous statements by, you know, that these witnesses gave to police, something that, and that's where just like White, I'll tell you this. Jody should get a new trial based on ineffective assistance of counsel, not for any legal reason I can particularly point to, but because just Ernie White was just, and I don't know if he was a shitty attorney, but he did a shitty job on Jody's case. So bad, so unprepared, and so bad leading up to this. Because there's all these things that, you know, witnesses testify. For example, just as an example, like all the Miles testifying that DeMario was with them on the porch when Shaddis Wells came and gave us this threat. Like, that's bullshit. And that was not hard to figure out. Literally every single one of them. Glenda Miles tells the police, I was told to pass this message on to Mario. Andre Williams tells the police that, yeah, I later told Mario about this event that had happened previously. Carvey, same thing. Oh, like everybody says that Mario wasn't there. And then they all got on the stand and said he was there. And White just missed it. He completely missed it. As just one example. So it was the prep leading up into this, and that opens this door for Cotter to come in and just, it was a masterclass. It'll be posted by the time you hear this, I'll post it tonight actually, but it was a masterclass. When you read the closing argument by Cotter, he tells a great story. He fudges a few things here and there, makes things seem more important than they were, but the reality is he didn't have a lot of work to do. He presented a bullshit case. The defense didn't contest hardly any of it properly. So he was able to just say, you know that case I just presented to you? Well, that's all what happened.
Well, and he think about the 911 call. He stipulated to the time of the 911 call.
Don't even get me started on that 911.
But what I'm saying, I mean, that's another part, right?
Yeah.
He stipulated to a time in the phone call and the 911 call that he hadn't heard.
He didn't. First of all, let's back up. He didn't listen to it before the trial.
Yeah.
Like that in and of itself is ineffective.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Like, yeah. He stipulated to something in that phone call that he didn't listen to the phone call.
Mm-hmm. And then that became the state's narrative. It became his, I'm getting ahead of myself for next week or for Sunday's episode, but it became part of his goddamn narrative. This time that he stipulated, this miraculous time that he just decided was the time.
Mm-hmm.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
L-E-T-E-N-P-C. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
L-E-D-E-N-E-Z. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
But yeah, I mean, as far as like most lawyers say, the term I was here, best story wins. And it was like, he told a story that made no sense. And he did it systematically. You know, he went through and pointed, you know, here's all the reasons why we know Jody committed the robbery. Here's all the reasons why we know Jody wanted to silence him. Here is, here's the reasons that we know that Jody was the one that committed the murder. You know, Victoria's testimony and Lenny Williams, and that's the stuff where he's fudging stuff, right? DeJuan James, that black and gray could be this Michigan jacket that could be black and gray. It's like, bullshit, it could be. It's not even close. And anyway, you know, but he doesn't say that. Obviously, he just says, you know, of course it's going to look black and gray at a distance when in the dark. And Lenny Williams identified, you know, he misstated facts. You know, like Lenny Williams didn't actually say the car sounded the same. He said, I don't know, similar is what he said. But anyway, but it's like, here's all the reasons why we know Jody did it. And then last but not least, here's the problems with the alibi. In the alibi, you can go ahead and believe that Jody didn't leave work till midnight because they had plenty of time. They had plenty of time between midnight and 12:40 to still get there and kill Mario. And it just leaves the jury with like, well, obviously it was Jody, right? That's what, you know, it was a really good closing argument.
And just to, not to put you on the spot, but I guess to put you on the spot, sometimes, you know, when we talk about how these things happen, we talk about who's complicit in what. Do you feel that there are times when the prosecution honestly believes they have their person and that the bad actions were sort of isolated to the police and their work and what they bring to the table when a case is being prosecuted? And is this that case, if that's even possible? Or is this a situation where, in your heart of hearts, without knowing the contents of someone else's, you know, mind and soul, but based on the evidence in front of you, do you feel that that prosecutor fully 100% knew that they were railroading an innocent person?
I think that the evidence suggests that the prosecutor maybe didn't know they had the... Well, no, I can't even say that. No, I think the evidence suggests that the prosecutor knew Jody didn't do it, as evident by the fact that the prosecutor had that timesheet in their file. They made this whole closing argument about how we don't know, there's some wiggle room of the time, and they're trying to remember, when the entire time Cotter had that timesheet in their file. That's not a mistake. You know, that's not an honest mistake that they had that and then still pretended that we didn't know. The prosecutor has heard the 911 tape.
Right.
The prosecutor does know how long things were. And my guess is there probably wasn't a super long time. My guess is that 911 tape wasn't a flowing tape from beginning to end, like from Victoria's call all the way till McGinnis. They're saying they're hearing a lot of traffic. And again, we don't have the tape to see, but if they had it, we could throw it in an audio software and see where it stops and starts. But my guess is that it's only recording when somebody's talking on it. And so it would be a shorter time. You know, there's not long, because when you listen to the scenes like this, they're all working right there. You know, and there's this is getting really into the weeds. There's two different channels you work on. There's an operating channel and then a dispatch channel on the radio. So the dispatch channel is one that's dispatching every single police officer to every single call, so on and so forth. Well, that channel needs to be open. So you switch over. Like, we had the same thing in the fire room. We called it Fireground One. Like, we had our main dispatch channel. When we get on scene, we'd switch to Fireground One. That's our communications on the scene. So all of that would have been moved over to a different channel. There wouldn't be constant traffic. There wouldn't be constant talking on the radio. You try to be very limited what you're saying on the main channel, which is the one that they were recording. And then also there was a phone call on it. The whole thing is just a mess.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. I'm glad that you just kind of put it in that context, because I'm realizing as you're saying this, and forgive me if I'm the odd person out here, but I guess I'm realizing as you're saying all this that I still don't understand what is purported to be on the call, like from start to finish, like whatever the actual start and actual finish and everything in between. Could you just refresh me on what would be purported or what you would expect to hear on something like that?
Well, you heard me stammer halfway through it because it occurred to me that that had the 911 call on it, which would mean it's the phone line. But then they're saying that over the radio, they're listening to, they're hearing radio traffic. So I don't know what the fuck it is. Now that I'm saying, like, I'm like right in this moment realizing if it's supposed to be the same recording, why do we have a telephone call and radio traffic on the same recording?
Why do we know why they played it at all? I mean, it was the state who played it.
The state said they were playing it to establish the time.
Right.
Instead of just, you know, having the EMS report come in or the dispatch log or any other way we can absolutely know
so
what time it was.
Weird.
What they were doing was apparently on that recording, they said when they got a hold of McGinnis, they said on the recording that it's 12:51 a.m. And so what the prosecutor was doing, what they said was happening was they started playing it. And so you could hear, and they played the 911 call and then continued playing this tape, which again, I don't know how the telephone and radio come together there, but there are all this ancillary traffic that's going on, they said. It sounds like radio traffic. And then at some point, they're going to say, contacted McGinnis, it's 12:51 a.m. And then we're supposed to do the math and say, okay, well, the tape played for 20 minutes. So they said at 12:50, this was 12:51. So if we go back 20 minutes, and that means the 911 call came at 12:31. Or they were saying 12:04, but we know it wasn't 12:40 because the tape played for 12 minutes and they still hadn't gotten to 12:51 yet.
That's super. Yeah, that just is so weird.
Yeah, the whole thing is extremely suspect. The call, and it, again, especially because back to your original question, like, could this have been the prosecutors really thought they had the right person and it was just the police that were? No.
Yeah.
Because the prosecutor could have easily gotten the dispatch log.
Yeah.
They could have looked at it and seen exactly what time this call came in. And for those people that are in like the Jody is guilty camp, you can't ignore that. Like you can't ignore that this information was there and readily available. It is an oddity and it is rare and it is, I've never seen it before. This was easily accessible information to know exactly what time this crime happened. Easily accessible, and we don't see any of it. And the only way the prosecutor is now going to try to establish the time of the murder is to play this tape. Like, that's the best. So what that tells you is, what it tells me is, obviously it was important to Cotter to show evidence to the jury what time the murder happened.
Mm-hmm.
That was a major part of his case. He had to show what time the murder happened. And his method for doing so was to play this long-ass recording where at the end of it, they're going to say it's 12:51 for you to do the math to figure out what time it happened. That is not the most efficient way to get that
done.
So shady.
Did we ever talk about how they reconciled that in court as far as like the reports that say the officer there was there at midnight?
That never came up. That White never fucking brought it up. That's what I mean. He left this door open. I don't know that he read it doesn't seem like he even read the case file. And according to Jody, White was constantly asking them throughout the trial, when a witness would come up, who's that? Like, White didn't even know who the witnesses were.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, that's like being in a nightmare. That's like one of those movies where you're watching it and you're like, oh, no, this is one of those movies where everyone is against you or everyone thinks you're crazy and you're the only one who knows what's going on and no one can help you. Yeah, that is so shady. And it's interesting, too, because it was important enough to them that they were comfortable playing the 911 call where it sounds like it created an opportunity for someone, in this case, having to be Jody on the stand, saying, didn't you hear what she says on the 911 call? Like,
yeah,
if you can hear her saying, like, there's a bunch of people down there, da 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 da, then I don't see why they would want to do that unless they felt they had to, because it was the only way they were going to try to get around how long something, like what the actual time was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, they had to establish, and that's my point. Yeah, they had, Cotter, in order to make a case, has to establish the time of the murder.
Yeah.
He has to. It's something, like, you can't say Jody's time was not accounted for at the time of the murder if you don't know what time the fucking murder happened.
Right.
So he has to establish a time, and it should mean something to you, even if you think Jody's guilty, that that's how he was going to do it. That's the only way he made any effort whatsoever to establish what time that happened. And again, it was a huge miss. Like, McKinney was on the stand. White should have said, you wrote in your report that you got there at midnight. Like, there's so many different ways that this could have been attacked. And it just wasn't. White could have subpoenaed the, before the trial, the dispatch log, the MS report, all the stuff that's missing from the, everything that would have a concrete timestamp is absent from this file. You should wonder. You should be wondering why that is. Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
L-E-T-E-N-E-Z. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Doesn't this make you wonder who else is in that prison who may not need to be and shouldn't be?
So many. Yeah, it always does. There's so many people. Anybody that's going, we just spent over an hour talking about the Delphi case, but the same thing, like anybody that is going to trial, like you have to wonder. It's not common. Well over 90% of cases just get pled out. Most people don't go to trial. Like this is an oddity. And in this case, you see like all this frustration we're talking about, you see it come out in Jody's testimony. When Jody gets on the stand, you can tell Jody is frustrated as hell because Jody knows that case file. Their attorney didn't.
Ugh, it's chilling. We've addressed a lot of stuff. This happens to us sometimes when we're passionately going off on kind of what's been going on and what's in the episode. But we just did the thing that Lauren is asking, or at least as best as we could, which was, I think this was already discussed, but can you review why the timeline of the murder isn't able to be nailed down based off 911 calls? So there you go, Lauren.
Yeah.
They made sure it couldn't be.
Yeah.
And then pretended it could.
Yeah. And then to be clear, it could have been. Like when that night, like there was no reason to play that whole tape. They literally, the same dispatch center that had that tape has a typed out, time stamped log of exactly when that call came in. They had it. So it absolutely could and should have been completely nailed down. But instead they went through this weird horse and pony show to try to get everybody to do some math. And that's what makes me like, again, we don't have it. We don't, it's crazy that we don't have it. But like, I am assuming, and this is maybe my bias, but I'm assuming that that tape wasn't a straight tape from beginning to end. That it was like, it was recording the entire time. Most notably because the telephone call and the radio traffic are two different things.
Well, that's kind of a good thing to know for a future trial, maybe, if anything ever got recovered, which is why no one would ever want you to recover it. What, when people who believe that Jody is guilty, do they, have you had that, like, I'm trying to remember if you've had that discourse where they, do they have a reason why that information wouldn't be available? Like, do they have a reason for why there would be no dispatch log, or is that never, does that never enter the conversation? I'm just curious.
We were told the entire file was shredded, but there was still the original murder book is what McGinnis called what we have. Mm-hmm. So then we got the case file from the prosecutor's office that had everything the police gave them short of any actual evidence, but the actual documents the police gave them in their file, which was, had a little bit more to it than what was in the murder book that was taken out. But it doesn't appear that McGinnis ever included any of that information in the file. As far as the tape goes, I don't know, because that was a piece of physical evidence. Like, unless they shredded a cassette tape, that should still exist somewhere. But I can tell you, they're claiming to everyone, not just me, that it doesn't exist.
Well, do you think it's possible that then I'm not, sorry to harp on this, but we don't have too many questions, so maybe it's not a big deal. But do you think it's possible, with what you've just said, do you think it's possible that the prosecutor really was like, guys, where is the 911 log? Why don't you have it? And they're like, we just don't. We lost it. But here's this tape. This tape is going to do everything you need it to. And the prosecutor was like, okay. And like, wasn't part of the craftsmanship that could have gone into all of this. Like, that the prosecutor's like, well, you guys really fucked up, but I guess I'm going to work with what I've got.
No, because
I don't know why I'm trying to give this guy so many outs.
All the prosecutor had to do was literally, I would say he could walk, wouldn't you?
Oh, no.
Could walk from his office to the dispatch center and say, hey, I need the dispatch log for this.
They're next door. They're literally next, like, they're connected.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it would have been Benton Harbor Dispatch, so he would have had to go over the bridge.
Oh, yeah, but still.
A mile and a half?
Yeah. Well, hold on. Nobody said anything about a bridge at first. This seems impossible.
So, just thinking about this, is there a possibility that on the dispatch side, all the audio is on one, like, is recorded, like, in one encapsulation? So, like, whoever the dispatch was, that phone call coming into them and their radio traffic out for their audio is just encapsulated into one thing.
Possible.
Great question.
Because that's the only way that I could think that why it would be.
Yeah.
Because it definitely is two different things, but if their audio is being captured somewhere else, third party somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is possible. I don't know how that works. And I know how it works at the Barron County Dispatch Center, which is who dispatches Benton Harbor now. Mm-hmm. But at the time, Benton Harbor had their own dispatch center and they're not giving me any information. So I don't know. Hmm. But that is a possibility that if everything they say, because they're talking through one microphone. Mm-hmm. But then I would think that, yeah, they have one headset on, so everything must be channeled in through. So maybe, yeah, that could be it. That's maybe why it's all recorded, why the phone and the radio traffic is all in the same one. That's very possible.
Nice. Good job, Zach. You just solved it.
Easy.
No, but it's good. But like, it's good to think these things through. I mean, it's good to be thinking critically about this stuff, to try to unpack, you know, how you would go about even doing this.
Real quick, before you go to the next one, I want to address what Nick Bowman just said in the YouTube chat. He said, you need Susan Simpson to go boots on the ground and find all this in a box in storage. That would be great if they would let anyone in the building or look at a box or claim they even have a storage. So in Susan's case, they were like, sure, you go through it. In our case, they're like, nope, it was all shredded. Nothing exists. Yeah. And also, by the way, I think Erica and I went to the police department three different times. Every time there was nobody there. We just stood there, rang the doorbell, right, like we knocked on the little window where there's supposed to be like a person behind it, and nobody would come. There was a little phone you could call, just rang and rang and rang and rang and rang. We could see through we could hear people, but no one would come to the window.
Ew.
Yeah.
Whatever, teenagers.
And
Did you hear him giggling and whispering behind the glass? Come on.
But the thing you have to realize, too, is that is before any of this came out. They didn't know who Bob was at this point.
Yeah.
Well, they knew. I had filed the FOIA request, and McGinnis knows me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, fair enough. But yeah. I didn't. I'm assuming they didn't know you.
Yeah, Nick, whoever was supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Nick says, did you jiggle the doorknob?
Yeah, I should have.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So let's look back at this other piece of something that came back to us in this episode. Tony says, can you remind us how we know Officer Sturgill's testimony was false?
His own words. So his own report. So he, so one way, the first reason we thought, hey, this is bullshit, was first Jody said, yes, I was there. I was the one fighting over the gun. Leon was the one in the car. I'm like, well, wait a minute. So how did Sturgill identify you as the one that fled? So that was the first thing that flagged it for us, right? But there's certainly people out there who don't want to believe Jody. Then that caused us to go in and start looking at like the letters and the stuff that Leon himself wrote, where Leon had said on multiple occasions that it was Jody was the one that was fighting over the 22 with Mario. Literally everything said that. But then Sturgill said that it was the person in the car was who he identified as Jody. So then we started looking at Sturgill's report and saw that in Sturgill's initial report, he says that he was at the Congo church. He heard the gunshots and he drove up Broadway and then turned right onto, I can't remember the name of that, which road that was. Bellevue? It was Bellevue.
That sounds right.
Turned right on Bellevue, pulled up behind the car where the struggle was happening. Then in trial, he testified that he went from the parking lot out to Pipestone, which is the opposite direction, around and went west on Bellevue. So he was face-to-face with the car. And that's how he made the identification was, he said that he pulled up face-to-face with the car. His headlights were shining directly on the suspect that got out of the car. And when he got out of his car, he was face-to-face with that person because they would be on the same side of the car. But his own report shows that he was never in front of the car. He was behind the car on the opposite side. And so none of that adds up at all. He would have never been face to face with him. So his own report proves that he was lying. But then also we have what Jody said, what Leon said, I believe even what Terrence Hunter, like what everybody said was that Jody was the one that was fighting over the gun. It wasn't Leon. So that's how we know that it was false.
Thanks for the last refresher. Jordan says, and this is the last question I have about this stuff. Jordan says, Bob starts the episode saying jurors make their decision based on closing arguments. Is this just anecdotal or are there studies and research that proves this is actually happening consistently? Example, jurors were planning to vote one way before the closing arguments and then had their minds changed by a compelling closing / summation.
It's anecdotal, but it's anecdotal. That has been said to me by every trial attorney I've ever spoken with, even, you know, flip to the other side, right? So the prosecutors, their podcast, like they say it all the time. Defense attorneys say it all the time. Bob Mata, we talked about it, mm-hmm. Same thing all the time. So it seems to be a very consistent belief amongst all attorneys. Now, it's one thing if the evidence is just absolutely garbage, just they completely shit the bed. But then the other thing to think about is just human nature, right? So the way trials are presented, and if you read the trial transcripts on our website, you see what I mean. It is a long, slow, painstaking process. A firearms analyst might be on the witness stand for 4 hours, just mind-numbing testimony. It's not like it is on TV.
Do we know how long this trial was?
5 days.
That's a long time.
Yeah, and that's a short trial.
That's a short trial, and that's a long time.
But yeah, so it was 5 days, but it spanned over a weekend, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the actual, because there was a break in there somehow, but I know that in the closing arguments they referenced, like last week we were telling you this stuff. So the jurors hear all this piecemealed stuff just peppered in, and they're trying to make sense of it all. And then the defense and prosecution, they come out at the end, and that's when they put it all together for them in a tight package. And they start to reference all that evidence and tell them how it's all relevant and how it all fits together. And that's how, you know, it really makes a difference, I think, just human nature in general, why the best story wins. Because, you know, like Cotter, as I said, it was a masterclass. You know, Cotter told a story that made no sense. It was systematic. He spoke with authority. He was powerful. There was no question in anything that he was saying. Everything he was saying is, this is what happened, and this is what it means, And that's how we know it was Jody. And just boom, 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 boom. And all of that evidence has been spread out over 4 days of you know the cases in chief coming out. And that last day are now all coming together into something that is a flowing narrative that makes perfect sense. And I think that's a good segue into what we got coming in 2 days on Sunday. We're going to hear the defense's closing argument and the prosecution's rebuttal. One thing that that is frustrating about our system is on paper, the prosecution has the whole burden of truth. The defendant is innocent until proven guilty, even though I think that we know, again, that's anecdotal, but I think we know that that most people see that person in the defendant's seat and they see those uniformed officers and they assume that person's guilty and they need to see him prove their innocence, even though on paper, that's not the way it's supposed to work. But because the prosecution is the one with the burden, they get the final word. And think about what a disadvantage that is for the defense. So the prosecution goes up and does their whole closing argument. Then the defense gets up and makes their closing argument. The prosecution gets to take notes on everything that the defense just said. And then they get the final word where they get to rebut that stuff. They get to contradict it. They get to point out the flaws in it. They get to say it doesn't make sense and the guy's full of shit. And then that's it. The defense never gets to come back up and defend that at all. So it's like in general, it's tough, right? That the state gets the opening statement and they get the first, they bookmark it. They get the beginning and the end. And they get to present their case in chief in first also. And they get the final word.
How clear is it in jury instructions that the closing arguments are not evidence?
It's clear, but again, that to me, that's the same as when somebody says something on the stand.
Mm-hmm.
And then the judge goes, there's an objection. The judge has sustained. And they tell the jury, disregard that. You're not allowed to.
Well, they already heard it.
Yeah. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a fun little dance that we are doing, even though everyone knows.
Yeah. So if somebody says, well, the defendant confessed, and they're like, whoa, there was a motion in limine. You can't bring that up. Jury, disregard that you just heard that the defendant confessed. Are they really disregarding it? Are they not? Are they not going to? They may not say it out loud, but is that not going to play into it? So, yeah, the judge is clear. And it's just like, you know, there was no objections in this one. But even when there's an objection during closing arguments, if somebody just completely flat out misstates the evidence, which Cotter did a couple times and White let it go, even if they object, the judge will say, overruled. I'll remind the jury the closing arguments are not, they're not evidence. But like, really?
Yeah.
Are they going to, and that's one of the reasons why I always say it's frowned upon to object during closing arguments. One, it's not effective. And two, it tends to just make you look kind of desperate and petty.
Right.
That's why a lot of attorneys won't do it because they know they're not going to get there. They know they're not going to get anything done about it. And at the same time, they're just going to look petty unless they're able to like come out in their closing then and point out how that information was incorrect. But anyway, you're going to hear all about it. You may have already got the hint of this, that I was not impressed at all with Ernie White's closing arguments. I even shared with you guys some of Erica's notes when she was writing the outline in it.
Erica was not impressed.
Yeah, young Erica was not impressed with the closing arguments of Ernie White. So you're going to hear all that on Sunday, and then don't forget that the follow-up for that will not air until 2 weeks on the 22nd. Make sure you tune in on Sunday. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for all your love, support, and engagement, and we'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks.
Thanks,
everybody.
Friday
follow-up.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.